Hi, welcome back to a new episode of Shut Your Face. Yes, I have kind of changed some things around, but it's still just as cool. Anyhow, if you're not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? It's really cool. So head over there and become a member so you can get early access. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and let us begin.
Hello, lady.
Hey, is this Lene?
It is. How are you?
I'm good. I was very worried if I say your name right or not.
No, you got it. It is a
weird one.
I love
that. That's actually your name. That's not a nickname, right? Lene.
Yep, Lene. Mom just had to put a space in it and make it a little more complicated.
Well, no, I mean, we need different, you know?
Yes.
What's the point of being a plain old Jessica or Jennifer?
Well, she was a Kathy. So she's
nothing
like, I'm not naming
with
my
Kathy.
Kids anything. No, but she didn't like it because there's like 5 Kathys in her class. So she's like, I'm going to make sure all my kids have different names.
You know what? That's funny you'd say this because my name's obviously Brianna, but Brianna was not popular when I was born, when I was younger.
No. That's what I was guessing, too.
Yeah, and my sister's name is Marlena. And so, which is still kind of, Marlena's not very popular at all, but Brianna has become more and more and more popular. And I don't know if that was my mom's thinking, but you just made me think about that because you're right.
Yeah.
You're
kind of like, that doesn't take much when there's a lot of people with the same name.
Right.
But sometimes
Kathy,
there's nothing wrong with that either.
Right. Please raise your hand, Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy, yes. She's like, yeah, my kids aren't going to have normal names. I'm like, besides my brother, somehow they got Calvin and Carl.
You know what? I love that, though.
Yeah. Except for it was a pain, they all had CF initials.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think
about
that.
So when I was doing school clothes, that was fun. Their initials were on their clothes, but I'm like, you had 3 kids literally in a row, and they all have the same initials.
Come on, there, Kathy.
Come on.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You're a fairly busy lady. You do hair full time, which is, God bless hair people. I don't know how y'all deal with it. I really don't. You do hair. You do barrels. You run barrels and show rodeo, and then you also do modeling and stuff now too, right?
Well, I kind of just fell into that. It's not really a side thing. It just happened. Some of the events that I was at, I work for Draw It Out on the side, a horse company. And just from making friends and stuff, you just kind of fall into some of those things. So just happened, I guess.
Yeah.
Weird how that works when you go to, market and some of those different things. You meet people and you're by people. And that's what I think I love about the horse industry. It's like a big family.
Yeah. I was actually going to touch on that with you because it's like rodeo specifically is in its own little corner, I think, because
it is.
It is because, I mean, I know I've dabbled into all different types of disciplines. I'm sure you've probably dabbled into all types of disciplines too, but you actually show in the rodeo environment. And I feel like rodeo environment is either you love it or you hate it.
Yep. There's no in between, I feel like, at all on that.
Yeah, because I feel like some of the girls can be too much. But you do hair for a living, so you probably handle it better than I do. But, because doing people's hair has always, like, that's like a tattoo artist. Like, my ex-husband's sister was an amazing artist. Like, she could just draw, like, that real kind of tattoo look. Like what she would draw, you would put on your body. And I'd be like, you need to be a tattoo artist. You need to be a tattoo artist. And her biggest thing was, what if I screw up somebody's body? Like, that's permanent.
I know.
Hair's, like, permanent when you get it done. I mean, not really.
It is.
You feel like
kind
it
of
is,
though.
So.
Yeah. And to them, they feel like it is because, if they do a big change or something, then that can completely alter their self-esteem too. So, I mean, you're kind of in control of someone's confidence. So you got to kind of walk on eggshells a little bit with that. But as you get into the industry more, and that probably is kind of like the rodeo world too, or any industry in the horse world, that the more you're in it, the more you know how to feel it out and know what people want too, so that kind of helps.
Yeah, but I feel like girls, particularly in rodeo, like barrel racers, are kind of that touchy feely. Either it's like sometimes they can be a little too much, and then sometimes it's like it just very is. It's a very touchy feely thing. But then again, on the flip side, barrel racing is a competitive thing.
Sport.
Like it's very competitive.
We're lucky down here. The rodeo circuit that I'm a part of is just an amateur one, but I think that's why I liked it a little bit better than going to jackpots, because I'm only dealing with, you know, maybe 10 to 30 girls a night. And we're so lucky. I don't know if it's just the girls that are a part of it or what. They're all very supportive. A lot of times we cheer for each other. They'll help you out. Like if you have something happen with your horse or, you know, if you have questions. I was really lucky getting into it that there's people that were willing to help me out and learn how to rodeo, since I didn't come from a rodeo family. Where sometimes I feel like at jackpots, you don't get that as much. And I don't know if it's just because there's that stigma. So people tend to stick to themselves when you're around 100 to 2,500 barrel racers, depending on what you're at, you know. But I do feel like, at least in my area, the barrel racers are maybe a little bit more warm and friendly than when I go to jackpots sometimes.
I didn't think about that till you just said it, because, I mean, a jackpot, obviously, it's going to have – does it have more money involved? Because if that's the case, that explains it.
I don't – it depends, because sometimes rodeos have more money, but jackpots, I think it's easy to get caught up with so many girls. You know, it'd be like a work environment where, you know, I'm only dealing with
hands.
A fraction, of them at rodeos. Where at a jackpot, you're dealing with a way bigger fraction. And I think there might just be that 1 out of 10 that maybe stirs up the drama and kind of causes drama for everybody else. And people either get involved in it or they don't want to get involved in it. And then I feel like barrel racers tend to stick to themselves because of it. And that kind of sucks, because I think it can be such a good, friendly, helping, supportive environment if you make it that way.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good thing to touch on this, because it's a flip. It's a, like, to me, it's a catch-22 on it, because you do have some very, very, like, give the shirt off your back barrel people. I mean, you have got some really great people out there in that part of the industry, and they can get overshadowed, just like with anything else in the industry, any other thing that you do in life, you know, by some of the big dramas, because some of the big dramas I've seen on Facebook have boiled down to barrel racers. It's never no other discipline.
Nope. And I don't know if it's just because, like, there's a lot more of us and we're more on social media than maybe, say, other disciplines.
Yeah.
And we're more open about the drama.
That's a good point, too.
You know, that people are more willing to talk about it, and it spreads more like wildfire, I feel like, in our industry, where I feel like when I used to show AQHA, and I feel like everything was maybe a little more hush-hush. It kind of reminds me of, I'm from a small Catholic town in Nebraska, and, like, everybody's going to know your business, but, like, nobody's going to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
Or sometimes when you get to a bigger town, if something happens and it's in the news, then everyone's going to know about it. So I think it's just dealt with differently in different industries, and I think that is a nice thing about the barrel racing world, but also a bad thing, that it is nice that it is open and we know a lot of what's going on in the industry. But I think that's why it does catch a lot of grief, and that there seems to be a lot of drama, because a lot of the good, like you said, gets overshadowed by the bad.
But this, like what you just said, you put it in perfect words. It's just as bad to be hush-hush about things, too. Like, that's kind of that's not a better thing. That's actually kind of worse, you know, if you're in an environment where, if you grew up showing AQHA, there's a lot of things that have happened in other industries that were kept hush-hush, and now finally somebody brought it to light, like Doc and the Tales. You used to could do that back in the day, nobody said anything to you. Now they run drug tests and stuff, and not that I'm condoning it. It shouldn't have been done. But it's going along with what you're saying. Okay, hush, hush. Well, no, some things do need to be brought to light.
Yep, and talked about to better the industry. But, you know, I think that takes time. But I think that is one thing that in the barrel racing world, it that kind of stuff is not hush hush. And I think it's
right.
because people want that competitive edge. So barrel
yeah.
racers talk about it with each other.
Yeah.
And I'm sure eventually we're going to be on that same spectrum of being drug tested and, you know, looked into a little bit. I think for the most part, the people that I know, there isn't a lot of that, thankfully, going on that people, because I feel like barrel horses are treated like their children. And so a lot
yeah.
of times people aren't going to do things that will, like, long-term affect them. And not saying
yeah.
other people in the industry do that, but it's just in other industries, I mean. But it just seems like it's a little bit different world in that aspect that people aren't, you know, doing things to their horses that will affect their career long-term. Because it's more, I don't know, people use their horses for longer, I feel like, in the barrel racing world. Not
they
always.
Are starting
you know,
to.
Your security horses. Yep. But... Yeah, they want them to last. So we're not doing those cutting corners as much as maybe say like, and I don't want to like throw anybody under the bus or anything, but just from
right.
what I've seen being in different disciplines like AQHA or the reining world, that some of the things, you know, they just want to get through a show and do what they need to do to win. And sometimes that horse might not be usable afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of money involved in names and breeding and pedigrees. So.
Well, I mean,
it's
just like you have to appreciate the advocacy of it. I mean, like you have to appreciate because, well, I've been on the butt end of not horse issues, but other issues that, you know, weren't true and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you have
yep.
to appreciate the advocacy of people that do care. Because, you know, it's
yes.
one thing to deal with somebody that's passionate and they care and that type of stuff, and you can work with that. But it's harder to work with somebody who doesn't care. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I
you
agree.
Can sit down with
yep.
somebody and go, okay, well, look, let me educate you on this. Oh, okay, I get it. You know, we got it. We got it. Now we're good. You know, and talk it out compared to, like what you said, hush, hush. You can't ever
yep.
get talk about it.
No. No, and that's, I'm hoping, you know, with everything on social media and things being brought to life, in, you know, all horse industries that we can talk
yeah.
about things a little bit more and, you know, people will learn, like, maybe we shouldn't be doing some of these things with our horses or maybe I should be listening and I should be educating myself and, you know, trying to get out there more, maybe doing more clinics or talking to my vet more, you know, that there is ways of improving, especially on the medical side of things, I feel like, in horses.
Well, yeah, that you just made me think about my next question I wanted to ask you. What do you feel about a lot of the, I don't want to say newer, because, I mean, they've been around probably 5, 6, maybe 10 years now. You know, back in the 90s and 2000s, you didn't really hear of, like, saddle fitters. Nobody had a saddle fitter. Nobody
No.
had the certain things that we have now. Even, like, chiropractic. Well, chiropractic was starting to come around. But other things that you have, the PMS therapy, you have all types of, there's so much on the market of therapies that you can do and play out for your horse. Do you think that's helping, or do you think it's got, like, a backlash to it that it's not helping? Do you think it's too much?
I don't think it's too much. I think, you know, with everything in the world, everything's growing, everything's improving. We have better technology. We have better medical advances. And I know firsthand, I have a horse, the horse that I run barrels on, gets wider as he gets older. So I've had to get different saddles for him, and I can tell the difference when I do, you know, get him saddle fitted and change that. And I'm a crazy one. I get him adjusted once a month. We assume that I have not had him tested yet because I changed his diet and his symptoms went away, but that he's probably PSSM in some aspect or has some sort of metabolic issue. So he was starting to get more muscle sore. So that's one thing I found with him that really worked for him is just getting him chiroed once a month, and that helped keep a lot of his lameness issues away. I do think you can overdo it, though. I think every horse is different. And, you know, we've had horses that don't take anything. You know, some of them literally don't need a single thing. But
right.
you have some of those horses that might take a little bit more. And I think you just have to learn and really do your research in the industry and see – what fits your horse's needs at that specific time, and they might change too. I do think there is a lot of fads out there. I think, like I said, you really have to do your research and figure out who has the backing, who's legit, who's not legit. And I always say, talk to your vet. You know, your vet is going to be your horse's best advocate. Make sure you find a vet that you really trust and, you know, run these things by him. I have two vets. I'm lucky. I have one close to me that I use a lot, that she does the chiro. And then I have a performance vet that I go to for all my injections. But before I change anything on him, I always call them and, you know, hey, this is what I see going on. Do you think, you know, I saw this, that, and the other thing. Is this something that I should add to his routine? Or do you, like you said, is this more of a fad, or is this something that you think that would help him?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely, it's easy to get caught up into, like I've already said this before, social media is an amazing thing. I'm so glad that we have it. But on the flip side, just like everything else, it can be a really bad thing. And you can read some stuff or get told some things that aren't true, lead you down the wrong path.
Yep.
And I was like that with Summit. When Summit first started coming out, the shot and all that stuff, at first I was like, I'm not shooting anything on any horse, but I particularly had this little gelding at the time, and he had an issue in his hind leg, and my vet kept saying it's a lock and stifle, and I've never had a horse with an issue like this. Like, I wasn't even supposed to have this horse. I was helping a friend. But anyways, I got him, fell in love with him, whatever. We're trying it out, and I was talking to this girl about the Summit, and it just didn't make sense. I'm like, that just sounds like it's not actually fixing what is the problem, you know?
Yep.
But they just kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, use it, use it, use it. And I'm like, you know, but why is, like, there's no explanation for it. And I actually did my research, and this girl, this random girl, she was so nice. I can't remember her name. I was like, yo, can you answer some questions for me? And she explained it to me perfectly. She was like, what it basically is, it's just going to be a blocker. It's not going to do what sounds like my particular horse. Maybe for other horses it would work, but not for my issue.
Yeah.
She was like, it's not going to work for what you've got going on. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and that was like the best answer, because like I said, there's so many things out there, but it might not work for every horse. And I think that when people push that on the market, there's another, I won't name names, but like there's a supplement company that they only have one product, but they were just really pushing that this would be, it was basically a fix-all. And I'm just, you know, knowing the things that I do about the issues that it was supposedly fixing on horses, I was like, how would a supplement fix that issue? Like, there's no way. And then they had this big long list of things you couldn't feed with it, otherwise it wouldn't work. So then to me, that was like, that's basically they're out. So when it doesn't work, they can be like, oh, it was because you were doing this or you were doing that. And it's like, why can't you just sell it more as like, this would help, you know? Like, I'm not saying it wouldn't help, or, you know, maybe it would cure some horses in some situations, but you can't say it's a fix all for every single horse, you know? So that's what, like, I think, especially in the nutrition world, there's so many supplements out there. And I just don't like it when they say, like, oh, this is basically going to fix all your problems. Like, no, like, you need to do your research, talk to your vet, figure out what your horse's issues are, and they can help you decide what you should be feeding. And we're lucky there is so many supplement companies on the market that have been around for a long time that are created by vets that, you know, really know what they're doing. But, you know, even they will say, like, it's not a fix-all. You know, you got to feed it for 30 to 60 days. And if you see the results that you want, great. If you don't, like, a lot of them thankfully have warranties and stuff too. But, yeah, it's just you have to figure out what works for your horse. And there's nothing on the market that's going to completely fix every single horse that you have, I feel like.
Yeah, no, that's a little outlandish because, I mean, like, you're dealing with another – that would be like saying this will fix every human. I mean, like, that's just not. Yeah, you just can't. You have to be
situational. We wish. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no.
I mean, like, I would love that.
Right. Well, that's just like what you said, chiro. Like, me, luckily, we never had to do any of that. But when I first learned that chiropractic work on horses was back in the day, because my best friend, she showed English and I showed Western, and she would have to get her horse worked on for chiropractic care and all that stuff. And if you think about some of it, actually, you're like, okay, well, if we do it as humans, because I got a chiropractor and it does amazing things for me, why wouldn't we not do it for the animal too? Like, it makes perfect sense.
Well, and it kind of goes back to that thing too, that it's per horse or per person. You know, some people have to go all the time, but, you know, when my back's doing good, I might go 3 times a year. So what I'm you doing on my horse? That's why I tell people, they're like, well, do I need to be doing chiro on my horse once a month? And I said, no. I said, I would literally, you know, go once, and then if you feel like you need it again, like maybe in a couple of months, like start out slow. I feel like that's the best way of doing it with anything is, you know, try it. If it works for your horse, great. See how far you can go with it between adjustments, because like I said, some horses don't need it once a month. Some of them need it once a year, maybe every 6 months. Right. You just have to be your horse's best advocate, basically.
Yeah. Well, and I think people tend to, or maybe they don't look at it this way, like horses is a sport, but it's hard for people to look at it as a sport like we do football, softball, whatever, baseball, because the thing is living and breathing with its own brain. It's not, it's not a pigskin, you know what I'm saying?
No. But so they can't talk, even though we wish they would.
Oh, my God, right? Wouldn't that solve all the problems?
It would. Where are you lame? I can't tell. Help us out a little bit.
Where does it hurt? Does the saddle feel good?
Yes. Is it not the saddle? Am I just in my own head or what?
And they wonder why we get called crazy. Well, look at what we're doing.
Exactly. We're trying to figure out a 1,200-pound animal, what they're thinking.
Well, I mean, I don't show. Obviously, I'm still in the industry, but I don't show anymore. I'm not going to show. But when we used to show, I was just talking about this the other day with a girl. My mare was super fun. I mean, once you have these animals and you're with them every weekend, you're they become like they're like your human friends. Like you know them, you learn each other. And this particular mare, the one that I grew up with, she you could put one saddle pad on her and she would cow kick. I mean, you could just tell it would irritate her. It was the craziest thing. You take it off and put another one, calm as like nothing was happening, like nothing bothered her. And you're like, okay, all right.
See, you know, and that was a great point, because even though they can't talk to us, they're still telling us. We just have to be aware enough to listen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So before I forget, though, I wanted to kind of go back to what you said. So you did not grow up in a horse family.
I did not. My younger sister was obsessed with horses, and my stepdad and my mom thought she would grow out of it, and she obviously never did. She still has horses to this day. She barrel races too now, but I think I was 10 or 12, and they ended up getting both of us horses so we could show 4-H. Yeah, I had a little POA, and she had a blind in one eye, old AQHA show gelding. And, God, we just had a blast with those two horses. And, yeah, we just did 4-H. And then as time went on, we both got different horses. She got and we still have them. They're 25 now, so we bought them 20 years ago. She got a little Palomino ranch horse, and I got a English horse. My mom always said you get one horse and whatever that horse does is what you're going to do with it. So I went from just doing, you know, with that POA, whatever it could do, which was mostly pony pleasure. And then just some fun stuff, maybe trail and stuff on the side. As you know, when you're young, you don't really know what you're doing at all. So so I jumped into the English world on that horse, and then she did barrels and poles on her Palomino. And then eventually she got a reining horse. A couple years later, and she did reining. So we kind of dappled in a lot of the disciplines, but I wasn't able to barrel race because I just had the one horse. So I didn't barrel race up until I bought my black horse that I have now. But yeah, she did, I can't even remember what it's called, NRHA a little bit. And then we did AQHA too until I went to college. And then I quit riding probably from 18 to 25 or 26, and then I bought the barrel horse that I have now, and he was just exhibitioning. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. Never ran barrels in my life, but yeah, let's buy a horse that's just exhibitioning.
I think that's really cool that you did that.
We could grow together, you know. That was kind of the point of it. He was six at the time, five or six. So he wasn't super young, and Chantel had, one that's just like a year older than my black gelding that she was just starting to go. So we started going to barrel races together, and we started, you know, you working your way up. You exhibition, you get into the 5D, the 4D, the 3D, the 2D. And then my horse started to be in the 1D a little bit more. And I had a friend say, you know, I really think your horse would do good in the rodeo world. And I'm like, well, I've never rodeoed before. Nobody in my family has. I'm like, I don't know about that. But I thought, well, what's the worst that could happen? You know, I can take him to a couple and kind of go from there. And that's how that happened. And he ended up loving it. And that was something I never thought I would get into. But I think since he loved it so much, it made me love it too.
Yeah. So that's funny. So you never saw yourself, that was kind of my next thing. So you never saw yourself going into barrels. You just kind of, it just happened like that.
Yeah. My sister wanted me to go with her. And so I thought, well, that would be kind of fun. You know, we're lucky we have quite a few local jackpots around here. And, you know, the bonus finals was in Lincoln at the time. So we'd go down to that. And yeah, it just kind of escalated. And then all of a sudden I was in the barrel racing world.
Well, he's gorgeous. I'm sitting here looking at him
I'm
picking my jaw up. I absolutely love the all black, the king.
I was very lucky with him. He's been the best horse. I mean, he was, when I got him, he was super spooky and would pull back. And my mom's like, you're really going to try to go to rodeos with him? He was dead afraid of ropers. And I swear, every rodeo I went to, it never mattered where I parked, ropers would always be warming up behind him. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my horse. Like, he's just going to be gone. He's just going to run off, run down the road.
Ain't it funny though, what they're peculiar about? Like you, like my mare, if a Tennessee Walker or a gated horse of any type,
she's gorgeous.
She would flip out. I mean, flip out. She would just not be able to hit. Like it would send her into a whole nother. But she had a best friend who was a quarter horse that she couldn't be separated from. She'd have separation anxiety from her. But if you saw a Tennessee Walker, she would flip script. It was.
Oh, no.
Just like you and the ropers, like if you saw a roper, you'd be like, you better hold my horse.
Yeah, now he's not afraid of ropers. I don't know what happened. He's not afraid of ropers anymore, but if there's a white stall bag that's flying through the air, he's going to be gone. And then he's dead afraid of, there's this one rodeo I go to every year that they have two Belgians pulling a cart. And, I mean, that horse would be in a different county if I would allow him to be. I don't know what it is about those Belgians, but nope. He can't do it. Can't do it.
I think it's cute. It's not cute when you're dealing with it, but it's like cute when you talk about it. You're like,
yeah. They're all quirky. And that's what they always say. All the good ones are always the quirky ones. So if I have friends that they have a young horse that has like the weirdest quirks, I'm like, well, it'll probably be a really good horse.
Right.
Just gotta live through it.
You just made me think about something. I don't know if you agree or not, but like when it comes to buying horses and stuff, I know people used to ask a lot of questions. They used to like on Facebook, I don't see it much anymore, but during COVID especially, they'd be like, all right, well, this horse checks all the boxes, but we have one little thing. And I would always be like, pick your battles.
Exactly.
Pick your battles, because the perfect horse does not exist.
Like. No. And that's why I do believe in vet checking, but more vet checking to see what their issues are. And if it's an issue you can handle, like I own a bleeder. I'm not scared of bleeders. I'm not scared of PSSM horses. I'm not scared of horses that might have some maintenance, like hocks, stifles, feet, you know, like you said, you pick your battles. And now, 10 years ago when I was looking for horses, no, I would have, you know, maybe shied away from that a little bit more because I didn't have the knowledge.
Right.
But now that I've dealt with that with a horse, like, you know, if someone was selling a bleeder, I probably wouldn't be afraid of buying it if it was the right horse.
Right. Well,
it's just knowing how you can maintain them.
I would like to know more about that because I'm a little familiar with like navicular. We had a navicular horse and she was amazing.
Yep.
Like it was the easiest. Thank God, you know,
they always
had a good
are.
Barrier.
Why is that?
Do what?
The navicular ones. I don't know why. They're always the best horses. Like, I don't know why those are always the ones that get navicular every single time.
Yeah, that is, you are right actually, because the particular post that I was just talking about, the girl specifically said, because I try not to comment on things that I don't have any type of experience on, you know what I mean? But she specifically said this horse is great, but he's got navicular, or we don't know, we think he's got navicular, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, that's when I actually said, I was like, please pick your battles. Just pick your battles. Because our situation, that may not be yours, but ours was, our family had a horse, and she had navicular. Luckily, it was one side. She only flared up, oh, my God, maybe a handful of times in the 20 years that we had her. We kept medicine. Yep. We kept the right shoes on her. She was a breeze. I mean, she literally, we would put handicapped kids on her for 4-H.
Yep.
I mean, she was amazing. Yes, but you're right.
She always the safest ones.
I wanted to, before I get to get rambling, so let me, you know more about this than I do. I don't know anything about barrel horses, and I've seen it before. What do you mean by bleeder? What does that mean?
So this is something that I didn't know anything about, and this was the lady that I bought him from would have had no idea, since he was just exhibitioning. This didn't show up with him until he started clocking in the 1D. So basically bleeding is EIPH. It's called exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging, and it can be caused by quite a few different things, but what happens basically is the capillaries in the lungs, they burst, and if you're lucky, it'll come out their nose, but sometimes they can bleed back. And why I say you're lucky, if it bleeds out, then you can treat it right away. So I've seen it where my vet had two horses one summer that bled back, and the family had no idea. There was no symptoms. And why I say it's so important to treat is, since these people weren't treating it, and like I said, it wasn't their fault, there was no symptoms, the lungs, they end up, you can either develop scar tissue over time, or you'll get an infection in there. And I watched this lung drain on this video at my vet's clinic for like 5 minutes, and it still hadn't drained all the pus out of it. And they tried to keep it alive for like a month, and it ended up finally passing away. But it can be a really serious issue to deal with, like if it goes untreated. So that's kind of the disappointing thing. I'd say I've only dealt with one person that I know that didn't treat their bleeder, and I'm pretty sure it died from similar causes. But everybody mostly that I know, once they figure out that it's happening, so how I figured out that that's what it was is, you can go in, I think they say you want to go in within 24 hours. It's better right away, but we know how that works, especially in small areas like mine. You can't always get there right away, and right. Have them scoped, and then they can see if there's any blood in the airway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of treat accordingly. If it's a their first bleed or a bad bleed like that, they'll usually have you do 2 weeks of antibiotics. Mine's usually Uniprim. And then they have you give them, you know, rest those 2 weeks, and then you go back to your regular conditioning for a week, and then you can go back to running on that fourth week. If it's a slight bleed, I think once you figure out your horses, sometimes they just have you do the antibiotics, and you can continue as long as they're not continuing to bleed. I'm lucky mine bleeds out of his nose if he does bleed, and thankfully, since I've been dealing with this the last 7 years, we've figured out what works for him, and that's the problem when I say they can bleed for so many reasons. His was a combination of different things. So he is a true bleeder. And what I mean by true bleeder is where they're going to bleed no matter what, even if you control all these other issues in their environment. But he also will bleed from his allergies. He has really bad allergies. I got him allergy tested. I do the shots. He's on hydroxyzine in the summer to help with his, he'll get like a little bit of airway inflammation, and that will also cause him to bleed. But I'm lucky he'll bleed out of both nostrils if he's bleeding from his EIPH, and if it's from his allergies, he'll bleed out of his right nostril, and it'll be like light pink. It's the weirdest thing. And then he also has a capillary too close, or a blood vessel too close to the nasal passage on the left side, and sometimes that'll burst and he'll bleed that way. And so he's actually not bleeding. So that's why I tell people it's so important to, you know, talk to your vet, take them in. Every time you see blood, they'll scope them, and they can catch those things. So sometimes my horse is bleeding out of his nose, and it's not even from the EIPH. So that's what I found, that they can be for different reasons too. But I do run him on Lasix, which I know is kind of controversial, but in my opinion,
well,
it's the only
I don't
thing
know.
On the market.
I'm glad you just brought that up. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about like Lasix. I don't, and I would like to know more about it, because I feel like, isn't it a, you know what? What is it? What is Lasix actually?
So it's a diuretic, and my mom's a nurse, so I'm very lucky. She's been able to walk me through a lot of these things over the years. She comes on the road with me all the time. So it's a diuretic, and why it works for barrel horses is it's going to take the pressure off the lungs. And so this is my opinion on pulling feed and water. If you have a true bleeder, I think you're going to have to pull the food and water like the 3 to 4 hours out that they recommend. Because otherwise, you know, like my mom said, it's not doing its job. Like you're giving them a diuretic, you're giving them water, you're giving them food, and you're basically being counterproductive. So that's where it gets iffy. But so when I go to a rodeo, on the way, I make sure he has food in front of him at all times. I get to a rodeo 4 hours early, which sounds completely ridiculous. But the reason why I do that, since he is on Lasix, I make, like I said, make sure he has food in the trailer. We get there, I give him an hour to eat and drink before I give him his Lasix. If it's really hot, I'll give him like a sip of water, you know, if I feel like he needs a little food, if it's taking a little bit longer. But I do pull his food and water, because otherwise I don't think it works personally. But like I said, that's a whole different topic. Every horse is completely different. But for my horse, I feel like I have to pull his water and food 3 to 4 hours out. But he's also on sort of gut meds too.
So what does it actually do, though, when you say it's a diuretic? Does it help them go faster? Does it help?
So a lot of people think, like, in the racehorse industry that it can be a performance enhancer. Honestly, I don't think it gives them a competitive edge at all. And I say that because if I do not time my Lasix right, and if it is really hot or if it is really humid, he's going to be a lot more dull than, say, a horse that isn't on Lasix. It just helps him be able to compete without bleeding.
Yeah, and isn't there a backlash to that if he is already a bleeder?
Yes. Yep. Okay. So people, and I know people sometimes say, well, you probably shouldn't be running a horse that bleeds. And to an extent, I agree with that, but my horse loves to run. And he loves to have a job. If he was getting to the point where he was refusing the gate, or he didn't want to run, or if I felt like he wasn't, you know, competing to the standard of where I know he can, then I would back off. But
right,
I mean, he's always just, he wants to go, he wants to do his job. And that's where I think it needs to be kind of horse by horse basis when it comes to bleeders, because some of them do, like, once they bleed, they do get the allergy issues, and sometimes they don't come back from that, and then they don't want to do that job anymore, because it basically makes them feel like they can't breathe and they're drowning when they bleed.
Right. Well,
so that's
makes
where the
sense.
Allergy issues come in.
That makes sense. Yes. It's just like if a person has a nosebleed, I can understand that. But the Lasix is supposed to stop the bleeding.
Yep. Because it pulls that fluid. I don't 100%. I'm not a vet or a scientist on that.
Yeah. No, me neither.
That fluid out of the body and off the lungs. So it takes away the pressure somehow. And if only Kathy was on the podcast, she'd be able to explain it to you, because she can explain it in the person side of things, because that's why. So my grandmother passed away here a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that might explain it better. Heart issues.
Yeah, well, it says right here it says Lasix is a loop diuretic water pill that prevents your body from absorbing too much salt, causing it to be passed in your urine. Lasix treats fluid retention in people with congestive heart failure, liver disease, or kidney disorders such as nephroic syndrome. So that's for people. So it is diuretic.
Yep.
You are correct about that.
It is important, though. You know, it says it prevents them from absorbing the salt. That is one thing. After I feed electrolytes during the week, and then after a run, I always make sure to give them a tube of electrolytes too. Because
yeah.
It's important to, since you're pulling those electrolytes basically away from them, you want to make sure you give that back and replenish what you took.
Yeah, and this horse, I've actually had, the horse I was talking about that had the navicular, she would drink. You didn't have to worry about her. But my mare that I used to ride,
she would not drink. And it would, it luckily, knock on wood, we never had a colic issue. We never had any issues with her. We rode our horses pretty hard, but she would literally not drink. And it's just like, people would get concerned and we're like, leave her alone. She's not dumb. She wants to drink.
Yep.
Nope. She'll drink.
She'll drink. Yep.
But it's hard.
Be like,
you're
might
like,
not need more.
Looking at your horse, you're like, you've got white foam.
Please
on your
drink,
chest, lady.
Yeah. Like, are you sure you don't need water?
Are you hungry? What do you need?
Yeah. What do you need?
But I mean, but I run on a water bottle a day, so maybe she's like me. She maybe just doesn't need as much.
Right. But it's still frustrating. You're like,
it is.
You want them to talk to you.
Yep. Like, why aren't you drinking? Just drink some water.
Oh, Lord. So now I'm getting nosy on your profile. What is this at Dallas Market? So Dallas, I do know that Dallas Market is kind of the same thing. It's like apparel mart that Atlanta has, kind of the same thing.
Yep.
But you're there. What do you do there? What is this?
So I've worked for Draw It Out, the horse company, since 2019. I'm a sales rep for them. And, God, I think this was like my sixth or seventh market I've been to. So basically, the market we go to is in January and August, and it's called WESA. It's the Western and English Sales Association. And so it's basically where like the Western and English world meet twice a year. You have like your apparel market, but you also have all of the horse brands and companies there. So it's kind of fun. You get to meet and talk to other people in the industry. And that's where we go and we meet with the wholesale people. So it's a little bit different side of the industry. Usually if I'm working for them, I'm in a booth atmosphere selling to more of the consumers. But when we go there, yeah, we're meeting more with like the bigger companies and stuff like that, or even the smaller dealers that do more of the wholesale. So that makes it fun to see a different side of the horse industry that way.
Oh yeah, I bet so. And it's probably fun to see a lot of, cause like those, I don't know if it's anything like Atlanta, but Atlanta has different, they'll have a home furnishings market and they'll have like a beauty market. They'll have different like variations of each industry. And then it's basically where, you know, where everybody gets together and you get to see all kinds of stuff that you didn't know existed. I bet that's fun.
Yeah. They have 15 floors and they're all full.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how people go and shop that. Like, I'm glad that I just literally have to go to my booth every day. It's kind of overwhelming. I'm like, people are like, do you go to every floor? And I'm like, no. Most of the time, if I'm going to go do anything, I go through the book of who's there. And I'm like, okay, I maybe go stop at like three people, you know, say hi to the people I know or whatever. And then if I need anything, I might go over to that booth or something. But otherwise, I kind of just stay because it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, but that would be overwhelming because like Atlanta, I know Atlanta is the one in Atlanta is like kind of downtown.
I heard it's huge.
Atlanta. Yeah, it's freaking massive. You're like, that won't be going in there.
Yeah, like, I don't have time to do that whole floor. You kind of have to pick and choose. Unless you're there for the whole week, I don't even know if you could do that in a whole week. Maybe, if you're fast.
No, you're probably right. You probably would need, I mean, to actually shop and look and see what actually is all there, you probably would need over a week. You're probably right.
We're lucky, though. All the Western stuff is on the 11th and the 14th floor, and then all the English stuff is on the 10th floor. So that kind of helps people not feel like they have to go run to a million different floors. Like, we're all pretty localized, at least for that event. So that helps.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. So let me ask you this. If you had to choose another discipline, you were, you obviously just kind of walked into barrel racing and it worked, which is kind of cool. But if you had to choose another discipline, you know, or did you have one that you kind of wanted to do or specifically liked to do growing up, what would it be?
I really didn't have anything growing up necessarily. I've just always kind of enjoyed doing whatever I was doing at the time. But my barrel horse, he obviously didn't like ropers, but he loves cows. Just loves them. And I always wanted to maybe, I don't know, once I retire him from barrel racing, if maybe I can find something around here. I mean, it wouldn't be able to do it competitively, but at that point in his life, but maybe some team penning or some cutting. I think it's so cool how they can go out there. I have some friends that I've known over the years that have done the cutting side of things, and man, that is just a whole different world, but in a good way.
Yeah,
I can't imagine.
Insane.
They are. I just like could not even imagine. And the reigning world is cool, but I'm not a. That was one of my downfalls. Showing is I'm not a pattern person.
Oh yeah, yeah, I get it.
I can't remember my patterns.
Yeah,
so
I get it.
I think I get too nervous and it just goes out the window somewhere. So.
So
rating might not
enough.
Be my book.
Yep,
like that's enough. Yep.
I understand
that. That's
the
most points I can understand.
You are right about those cutters. Those horses are absolutely, like, I remember me and a group of us, back in the day, this was probably 5 or 6 years ago, this was a long time ago, we would go to Augusta and watch the cutting down there, and I used to go kind of help out around here, and I would sit there and watch them and just be like, it's crazy to see the way that they're able to move.
And how they just, you can tell they just love it, too. I think that's why it's so interesting to me that, you know, like, they're just so hyper-focused on that cow, and, you know, they want to go out there and do their job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, yeah, that's another thing. It's when it's like, if it's a horse discipline that involves a cow, it's like a completely different animal versus, like, barrel racing or even pleasure. I grew up doing pleasure. There was no cows. You couldn't put my mare around cows.
Or my horse either.
Yeah, or other certain things. The one with navicular, though, she was what they called a reject cutter. So she was actually raised. Yeah, she was born and raised on a Creek plantation in South Carolina. And somehow we ended up with her because, you know, she got sold off or whatever have you, you know, wherever they go. And to a guy who wasn't feeding her, like, these horses were.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was horrible. My dad was like, we'll just take them. Like, we're just going to take your horses now. And so they
probably didn't argue.
But you're right. Like, it's just, even the reiners, the whole slide stop and the dirt flying everywhere, it amazes me every time.
Yes.
I just look at it and I'm like, what the hell? How did you do that?
I know. And the amount of work, you know, I, like I said, never did it, but my sister did. The amount of work and training and how broke those horses have to be.
Yeah.
To do those things. And I think that was when I got into the barrel racing world is what maybe I was a little bit disappointed in. I feel like some of the horsemanship wasn't there, you know, coming from the pleasure side of things or the reining side of things, horsemanship-wise. But, God, those horses are broke. You know, I mean, you got buttons. You got buttons on buttons on those horses. And then, you know, a lot of times I would see these people, they just wouldn't have control over their barrel horses. And I'm like, Do you want to die? You know, like, you know, you can get your horses to have like a little bit more buttons, like you can get them under control. But I think now, you know, with social media and, you know, between the reins is a great thing. A lot of these fraternity trainers have been opening up and like helping people. And I think people are really seeing that we need horsemanship in the barrel racing world, and people are learning, you know, we're learning about bits. We're learning about, different training aspects, different drills, different tools, and people are going to clinics, and it's, you know, they're realizing it's not just about going fast.
Yeah, this is, I'm glad you just brought that up because it made me think about this post that happened. I don't remember when it was, but this lady apparently was at a barrel race, and she had like this. It was like an electrical, like a shock collar device.
Oh my God!
The
pad
on the horse, and. You know, this isn't downing barrel racing because you have problems in all of the disciplines, you know, like some of them, just like what we said earlier, some of it's not brought to light, but everybody's got some issues. So it's not trying to just point out barrel racers, but this particular lady made them look bad and she put this thing underneath the pad and she kept doing it over. And I remember watching the video and I thought to myself,
yeah,
are you serious?
What's the point of that? Like, you got to realize that's doing more damage than good, but I guess some people just are so stuck in their ways and they just think that, you know, there's only one way of doing things.
Or, well, my whole objective was like, are you really doing this, continuing to do this when everybody's telling you to stop for maybe $500?
That's the thing.
Is that?
I know. It's sad.
And I was just like, I didn't even know that existed. I didn't even know that type of thing was
possible, but I mean, it's just like, no. It happens in all types of, like, I did a podcast last year on the one that happened with Tennessee walking horses and the gated horses and the, where they would put the gasoline on them to make them step, you know, soaring them, and they would make them step higher. It was a huge scandal, and like a lot of people, if you look, Google it, you know, they ended up, you know, putting a crackdown on it or whatever have you, but which they should, but I was just like, nothing is kind of worth more than putting the horse's general welfare.
No, I agree.
I mean, behind the money
and
or
like
the
you
win
said,
or whatever.
For a couple $100 or even, I mean, unless you're on a huge level, the amount of money you're winning isn't covering your expenses in majority of the barrel racers. Like, not to knock on us, like,
right,
saying you can't go out there and win a bunch of money. You definitely can. I mean, look at Dusky Lynn Hall. Look at, like, the ladies at Between the Reins. You can make a good living at it. I'm not saying that. But for the majority of us, we're not bringing in that kind of money. And so I would hope the horse would come before that, at that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just made me think about I grew up pleasure. So, look, we didn't get no money. We got a ribbon.
No, exactly. I think that's why barrel racing sounded good to me, too, that I'm like, oh, I get actual money instead of points.
Right.
You know, like, but you're like, sweet.
I told somebody, I didn't grow up around rodeo, so I'm like completely clueless. I knew nothing about it until I actually started doing embroidery in it. But, I mean, I grew up around horses or whatever. You know, we had games. They call it games, you know, but it wasn't really professional level like you people would do it. And so I remember telling somebody, I asked my parents, I was like, so y'all made us do pleasure where we – you know, instead of rodeo where we could have possibly won some money. Is there a reason for this?
Well, it just seems, I don't know, at least in our area, it just seemed like the more common thing. Now they have junior high rodeos have gotten big in high school rodeo in our area, but really I don't feel like it was that big of a deal when I was a kid. So I just think that's what our parents saw, like, that we should be doing, because I feel like that's what was popular too. I feel like the AQHA shows were really popular when we were kids.
Yeah. And 4-H. And well, but then again, 4-H, I think it's cool that you grew up 4-H too, because I feel like, I've said this before, I feel like 4-H kids have a different edge, because we learn some, like what you just said, we learn a lot more about the hippology, like, and horse bowl, the kind of a medical side to it, a vet side. You learn so much more in with horses that kind of sets you up a little differently for wherever you want to go. I mean, I wouldn't trade those days for nothing.
No, I agree. And I wish it wasn't, because at least in our area, I feel like it's dying a little bit. And I don't think it's because kids aren't interested in doing it. I think it's the sports. Sports is so big in our area, and they just don't have the time. You know, sports are 24/7 now.
Oh,
and
wow.
So then I feel like a lot of these things like FFA, 4-H, or even just the kid just getting a regular summer isn't a thing anymore, because sports has just overcome everything else, at least in our area, which is just sad to me.
Yeah, because having horses will teach you and this isn't knocking sports kids, but having horses will just teach you a different level of, like, work ethic, I think. You know, having to take care of having something else depend on you just teaches you another. You can work hard, but then you also work hard for something that depends on you, a different type of responsibility, you know?
And you can have horses, cows, you know, pigs, livestock, your whole life. Where sports, the amount of us that are going to go pro or go to play in college isn't that high. So, you know, you're sending your kids and you're doing all this with your kids. And a lot of my clients, their kids end up getting burnt out before they're even seniors. Like, they just don't even want to do it anymore. Because they've been going, like, they put these kids in sports in the third grade, you know? They're out there, they're playing club sports, they're traveling all over, they're doing this, that, and the other thing, and they end up not even loving it anymore. And then they're missing out on all these other things that they could have been doing in the summer, too.
Yeah, this is true. Which I don't have kids, but I can see what I can see what you're saying. Oh, you don't have any either. We're just childless cat ladies.
Well, if you have a cat.
We are horse ladies.
Yeah.
I don't have a cat,
but I take care of cats.
Yeah, well, we're childless animal ladies. So
there you go.
I love it. Which, I think you should be able to
not, you shouldn't knock a woman if she doesn't want kids, or if she does want kids. I think you should just let people do whatever they want to do. If they want to have them, have them. If exactly. they don't, whatever.
Yeah, some people can or can't, you know. Everybody's life paths are different.
Exactly. Now, what do you think, what do you see, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years, 10 years, as far as rodeo and horses is concerned?
Man, I have been actually thinking on this because, like I said, I kind of fell into rodeo, wasn't really expecting to do it, and I wish I could get some of my time back with my horse. He's 16 this year, and so I think he's slowing down a little bit. So I think we're going to go back to doing some more jackpots and then just doing just a few rodeos in our area next summer. And then I'll probably try to retire him, I don't know, probably at 18 or 19, depending on how he goes, and let my niece use him down the road.
Aww.
I know. That's what I think what I'm looking most forward to. That was my biggest goal, was to get him as broke as I could and, you know, get rid of some of that spookiness so that hopefully he'll be able to be a kid's horse someday. But I am hoping in the next couple of years I'll be able to find another horse and kind of start over again. Everybody's like, no, you're going to want a finished horse that you can just hop on and go rodeo. And I'm like, I don't think so, though. I think I want to do it all over again. I think I want to, you know, get a horse that really fits me, and hopefully it'll be kind of the same spot where it's just exhibitioning, because I have a bad back and I can't get bucked off, so I definitely will not be the one breaking it.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't need a finished horse, but I need at least a broke horse. But, yeah, I really enjoyed the process of getting to where I've gotten, so I think I want to start doing it all over again, which might be crazy, but
no, I think it's amazing to hear you say that, because I mean, obviously if someone's not going to do this on a level that, like, they need it done quicker, you know, if your whole purpose is to go win money and go rodeo full time, then obviously you'd probably get a finished horse because you do need that time.
Yeah.
But to hear you say kind of to do the whole process, I personally trained my mare that we raised, and we buried her. Like, she was here for 30 years. She was our horse from the moment she hit the ground mm-hmm. till the day that she died. And to be able to say that you had a huge part of that on that horse's life, I think is not only rare, but it's really cool. It's really cool to be with them from the beginning to the end.
Yep.
It's just special. It's a little more heartbreaking, but it's special.
It is. I know. That's what all of our friends say. Like, oh, my God, because my sister's the same. We had – she had a reiner that was – her reiner ended up being navicular too. They bought him at 7, and they found out he was navicular after they bought him. But man, he had a lot of good years. She had to put him down 2 or 3 years ago. I think he was 23. The tendon in that foot calcified, and so the vet said, you know, at some point he's going to get up and that's going to snap, and he's not going to be able to use that leg. And my sister's like, you know, I can't have that for him. So she made the choice to put him down, unfortunately, because it was kind of, there wasn't any other options other than waiting to see if that would happen. But yeah, we
bless
we
her heart.
Oh,
bless her heart for that. That was a hard decision right there.
It was. And like I said, he was just like that horse you're talking about. I mean, you could put anybody on him. He would go, he was the best boy. But yeah, we're the weirdos that keep all of our horses. We don't ever sell them, and we keep them.
you're talking to another weirdo here. That little deal that I was actually talking about, I went through hell and high water to fix this. I'm not going to get into my situation with that. It was a bad situation, but she didn't honor the first right of refusal. But anyways, you know, bless your sister's heart for that right there. That was a hard decision to sit there and put his, you know, it would take all I have to come to that conclusion too. It would be a heartbreaker for me.
But I think as horse owners, that is something we have to, you know, like I said, going back to being their advocate, like they can't make that decision. And I think what helped her is when the vet went to put him down, she said that's the most peaceful she's ever seen a horse go. Like, he was ready.
Aww.
And so, like, that has to, you know, that makes you feel a little bit better that you made the right decision, you know, like
right.
he just went peacefully.
I wasn't planning on crying during this podcast.
I know.
Me.
Dang it.
But yeah, I think that's why I like the process, is because, you know, we get this time with them where they really become family. So, and you get to be there for all of it, even though it's hard, like you said, and it hurts, but it's a good kind of hurt.
It is. And I applaud you. I think it's a great decision to be able to choose to do that, because, you know, it is very hard to separate the, like, emotional attachment with horses and then the business side of it. Because, yes, some of it is very much a business. You have to run it like a business.
Yes, you have to.
You know, cut off those emotions. I get it. And
yes,
this is why I would never be able to buy
job.
And sell horses.
Me either. I know. I wish. I would get. I'd buy one and be like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna work on him, and I'm going to sell him, and then I'd end up keeping him.
Right.
Nope. Unfortunately.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No, they're forever homes with us, right? Unfortunately.
Yeah. But I respect the people that are able to kind of separate that, and I'm sure that's something that I guess it's just like anything, you know, that you do in life. Some people can separate it for certain things, and some can't, and, you know, it is what it is. But so you're going to end up getting you another one. You're going to start from the beginning, which is going to be cool.
Yeah, I'm. Everybody thinks I should be getting one now, but I have two horses. I have the one that I run barrels on, that's 16, and then I have my old pleasure gelding. He's 25 now. Like I said, I've had him for 20 years, but he's also navicular in both front feet, so I feel you when you talk about navicular, and he has two really bad knees. But we've been able to keep him really sound with shoes, and then my vet uses the spring injections on his knees, and he can go a full year with them. But I know after those quit working for him, he's gonna be done, unfortunately, too. And so I'll be in the same situation that my sister was in. But he's been retired since he's 18. He goes to rodeos with my horse, and he people watches. Like, he just sits there.
Aww.
And he just lives the best life, man. That's what one of my rodeo friends said. She goes, if I die, I want to come back as your second horse. Oh, my God, no. He lives the greatest life. He just eats and people watches. That's a trailer. So
there is not a dang thing wrong with that.
No, but I'll probably have to wait until he's gone. Because that's an extra expense, too.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, well, I can't believe – you know, you spend that kind of money on a pasture pet. And I'm like, well, I mean, he gave me a lot of really good years. And he was a good horse. He's a good horse now. He's a great babysitter. He doesn't do a single thing wrong. I mean, if that's what I got to do for him in his older years, I'll do it. And eventually, like I said, in the next couple of years, I probably won't have him anymore. So.
Well, and it's like the emotional, for me, it's the emotional connection. You know, obviously, little girl, we raised her. She's not going anywhere. Etta was kind of the same thing. We actually didn't raise her. I think she lived to be 32, and we got her when she was, I'm going to have to ask my dad this.
I know.
Yeah, because I don't want to lie, but I'm going to say anywhere from, she was already broke, already ridden, all that kind of good stuff. She actually came with a two-year-old we ended up selling because my dad just felt so bad for these horses. So I want to say she was anywhere from like 7 to 10-ish. And, you know, so she was basically with us for a good amount of time. But then again, I had this one little horse, and I loved her to death, but she was probably here maybe 2 years, 3 years, but we didn't really have an emotional connection. And I knew when I sold her, that was it. There was no first right of refusal. It was no, I was never going to see her again, but I was okay with that, you know? So, but even like that little blue gelding that I was telling you about, I bought him to help a friend who accidentally bought him. And it was right after we buried little girl. And so he was like this, I wasn't going to ride him or show him or do any of that crap, but he was just still like this pet, for better lack of words, that was here to fill up that space. And, you know, I just loved and cared about him a lot. And so I guess maybe it depends on what kind of emotional attachment you put on them from your perspective as to how, kind of how your experience goes with that animal, you know?
I agree. And yeah, some of them you don't get that emotional attachment to either, you know, like you do with a few of them. But Yeah, the ones that you do, man, it would be hard to sell them and to, you know, move on from it.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of agreeing with your friend. Like, you know, if you treat yours that way, if he gets to go to barrel races and just hang out and watch, be like, I want to come back as your third horse.
Yeah, like, can I just sit at the trailer too? It's the funniest thing, though. He legitimately just eats and people watches. It's hilarious. I'm like, you are the weirdest horse.
Oh, but he's with his friend, and his friend is y'all are out having a good time, so he gets to go with you guys.
Well, and I think he's a big reason of what made my horse less spooky, too, because, I mean, that horse is pretty bulletproof. There's not much that will get him away from his food.
Yeah.
So if my other horse got loose, like there's a few times he's gotten out of the pen, and he'll look for Duke, my older gelding, and he's like, oh, Duke's not out. And so then my horse just runs back in the pen. So it's like the perfect safety mechanism that I'm like, oh, as long as I have Duke, like, my barrel horse is not going anywhere. Like, he's gonna stick around this guy. So that really helps me over the years.
He's a good babysitter.
Yeah. Some of those are priceless. You can't
right.
get those
well,
kind
yeah,
of...
You just said it. You've got one that we had, like, the one with the viculars, the one that's, like, their weight in gold, man. You can't replace them.
Yep. Nope, they're going to cost you money, but they'll at least won't do anything wrong besides that. So that part
right.
helps.
So now I wanted to ask you one more thing. Have you ever exercised any of your hair expertise onto your horses?
Yes. Weirdly enough, that's how, I don't know. I get thrown into weird jobs sometimes, but
I love this.
You're like, a big part of that was kind of why I started working for Draw It Out. And they got the Show Barn Secret line in their line of products. And what I love about Draw It Out is that John is so good with ingredients. Like, all of his ingredients are all natural. Like, he comes up with all these I just don't even understand how he does it. He comes up with all these combinations, and they are, like, the best ingredients, best smelling. Like, I'll have an idea for something, and I'll be like, I don't know how you're going to do it, but, like, can you make this? And he's like, yeah, let me see what I can do. And then he always comes up with it. I'm like, how do you know how to put these things together to make these products? But, yeah, I feel like a lot of things that with that line is a lot of him and me going back and forth, like, hey, can you do this? Or, hey, I really like this, but can you make it like this? So, you know, they have a detangler that smells amazing. It smells kind of like peachy mangoes or something.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yeah, it's so good. That's one of my favorites. And then he's got like a body sheen that works really good. I'm trying to think of what else I use. I use a lot of that detangler. Their fly sprays. You know, I feel like we hash out a lot of things. His fly spray is water-based, which is good to use with those therapy products because the oil breaks down a lot of the different therapy products, whether it be like ceramic or copper. I don't think
you can use it on
oil.
Humans?
I mean, I'm gonna tell you that the FDA tells us no, but they are all natural. So if I use them on myself, they can't come for John, right?
Right. No.
So,
right. Yes. Exactly.
We do have a human line to appease the FDA. So they do have a human liniment line. So that's what Draw It Out started with. It was their liniment. They have a gel and a concentrate. But it's just expanded into this big thing. I love all their muds and stuff. But, yeah, that's I feel like where my hair side of things came into was I'm not a residue person. I hate residues. I want things to be simple. So, yeah, him and me have really hashed out a lot of different things to make it simple for the horse people, that it won't leave residue on the horse's coats, that you don't have to wear gloves, and that it's easy to apply, like, in the mane and tail area and stuff like that. So I love that he throws things my way and weird ideas so we can, like I said, kind of hash them out a little bit. But, yeah, I don't understand how he knows what ingredients would go with what. I think that's what I've been most impressed with their company. And I wasn't really looking for a job. It just kind of like rodeo, but kind of fell into there and
just fell in.
Just, yeah. I just started working for them because I believed in their products. Like they really worked and they were, like I said, were low maintenance, no zero issues with them. So yeah, I just really like it. And I like that they're more, it's almost like a family operation. small business. So, yeah, they're just really good people over there, and they really care about their customers.
This is really cool that you got to have play a hand in that. I mean, that's really cool, number one. But number two, you know, when we were growing up, we used, like, mane and tail. We used horse products before. And I remember thinking somebody said, or maybe it was my mom, well, I mean, if we could put it on the horse, what makes you think we can't use it on you? And that came about the whole fly spray thing, actually, which is hilarious, because they do tell you, don't put fly spray on you, and then we sit there and go, we should be dead.
Already
dead.
Exactly. Well, that's what always cracks me up when people come up to the booth, and they're like, no, this really works for my horse. Can I use it on me? And I'm like, well, technically FDA tells me no, but I have used this on myself before. So use your best judgment. Right. Oh, my God. But I like I said, it's all natural. It's safe on your hands. We don't have to wear gloves. So, I mean, if it's going on our hands, we should be, you know, we should be fine. And if you look at their ingredients and all their stuff, there's nothing bad in them. I think there's only one ingredient that possibly tests in the one product. It's in their enhancer, and it's lidocaine. So it, like, promotes hair growth, basically. But otherwise, all of their ingredients are clean. So that was another big thing, too. I liked that. And he can, like, it's just crazy. Like, when we go to market is when I get to experience him, you know, in person the most. And how he can just, like, ramble off these ingredients, and he can tell you what each and every single one does and why he picked them, and why he picked them over other ingredients. Like, it just blows my mind.
That is pretty impressive.
That, like, he is doing it all. Like, he's the president of the company, and he's out there. He's doing it all himself. Like, I just think that's just the coolest thing. He doesn't have people out there, like, putting products together for him. He's out there in the nitty-gritty, like, figuring out what would be best for horse people. So I really respect him for that.
Yeah, that is very impressive, because it's easy to just pop up something and put something together and just throw some marketing on it.
Yeah, and just market it. Yeah, and not care what it does or what it's going to do to people's horses or if they'll have allergic reactions or anything. And it's him or his wife answering all the messages, too. So it's kind of crazy that you actually get, like, the person that made everything is actually the one responding to you.
Yeah, that is really cool, too, because, I mean, like you said it earlier, and I obviously, like, we done cried and laughed this whole podcast. Obviously, you know, you're dealing with people's babies, regardless of business.
Yes.
If people look at them as a business or not, they still probably take care of them to a certain standard. You know, these horses are your babies, and so, you know, these people have these questions. It's not like a shirt or a hat, you know what I'm saying? It's like
things
are being ingested into these animals and
put
it on them. I mean...
Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like hair. You know, I don't want to tell people to use the wrong product, or, you know, like you really have to have that care, and it's not just a sale, you know. And
right.
There's a lot of people in the hair industry where it is just a sale, but you do have a lot of these different companies that it's more than just a sale, that they really wholeheartedly care about their customers and their horses. So... that's nice that we still, in this day and age, with everything being as expensive as it is, that there's still people out there that would go broke first, because they would rather have the product be good for their animals or for their people. So I like those kind of companies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad that you are with that kind of company. That's a good thing. And you've been with them for, you know, however long you've been with them, that speaks volumes. So. That since what you said 2019, so
yep,
that's a good thing. It's you don't never know what people have got, what kind of stuff they got going on and all that kind of stuff, and it's hard to communicate sometimes and figure out what's going
on. It is.
So,
and one, I'm horrible too, because I get, you know, with the different businesses, I get so many messages on my messenger and my text message, and I'll see them and I'll think I'm going to go back and reply to them. And that's why I try not to even open them, because then the notification stays up. But sometimes it just, by the time I get off work, because I work till 8, and then by the time I go out and feed horses, you know, that's why I feel like I was messaging a lot, like at like 9, 10 o'clock at night. So sorry about that. But yeah, that sometimes it, you know, it's already late and I don't want to bother people. So
No, I completely understand. Trust me, mine's early. Like, I'll be messaging and calling at 10 o'clock. It's not
good.
No, it's okay. That's me. Because I'm the same way. I'm like, oh, you don't want to lose that notification or you'll forget.
No, I do. I know. That's why I'm like, I'm going to leave the notification up so then I'll just remember to respond to it. Otherwise, I will forget. Like, as soon as I open it and I'll read it and I'll remember in like a week. But then the people already see that I opened it and then they're like, well, what the hell, Lene? It's been a week. So that's what I've learned with my clients. I'm like, just leave the notification on and then they understand when you get to it, you'll get to it. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, trust me, it's okay. I completely understand. And that's why
I know, but I need to be better about it too. So
do what?
I need to be better about it too. I feel like I was so good at it, at replying like 24/7. And then I finally, like this summer, was like, you know what? You know, it's okay to take a step back, take a couple of days if you need it, you know, so you don't feel overwhelmed. And then I feel like that's almost a bad habit to get into though too, because you do want to be prompt. So you got to find that happy medium.
That's funny you just brought this up, because from 20, I've always looked at replying quick as a form of respect, not just for me, but for the other person. Like, to me, it's always like, okay, I need to reply quickly, especially in business, like especially when it comes to a customer. I reply really quickly and follow up, do all that kind of stuff, because I think communication is key. But sometimes, you are very right, it's so funny you brought this up. Sometimes, though, people look at that as desperation, or they look at it as, like, they feel it as, like,
overwhelming.
They just look at it in a different way that it's not intended.
Yep.
It's caused me some issues, actually, before, because, like, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm being very professional, I'm being good, we got to get back quick, da-da-da-da-da, and the other person's taking it, like, a completely different way, and I'm like,
no, like, I'm not trying to be that way at all. Well, and, you know, even my sister said that yesterday. She had a couple, her job's changing at the hospital, and a couple clinics are getting shut down, and so everybody's nosy about it. So my sister-in-law and her friend messaged her, and they were just more nosy, like gossipy, and she's like, well, what the heck, like, they didn't even ask me how I'm doing. She's like, I'm basically losing my job. Yes, I'm getting a different job within the hospital, but like, I put my heart and soul into this for 3 years, and they're just messaging me like wanting the tea, you know, but then they didn't even check in with me. And she goes, is it bad that I'm taking offense to this? And I said, well, you know, you could be reading those texts out of context. Yes, they should have said something to you like, hey, sorry that this is happening to you, and then maybe ask for the tea. But also, it's so hard with messages and texting to, like, read them. It's so easy to read them out of context, you know, and some people just take some of that way too seriously too. So, like you said, you could be being 100% professional, and they're just like, well, what? You know, some people just read things completely different.
Well, yeah, this is very true, because in me, I'm a very big, I try not to scroll, and I try not to look at people's profile, because I'll start to, like, assume things. And so I was really big about the straight messaging. And people probably thought exactly what you just said. Like, I was insensitive, or maybe I didn't know what's going on. Well, I try not to look at social media, because I know for a fact it can be very fake, and people can post whatever they want. And so, you know, I try to, like, just message directly. But I think it's so weird that you're talking about this, because if you take that same situation in real life, let's say your sister or somebody just walked up to her at her job and they had no idea nothing was going on and said, hey, I heard this. Do you know what's going on? You know, I think it would be different if the same thing as if me going, you know, hey, have you taken care of this? And then all of a sudden they go, well, did you know that this is going on? You know, you're being insensitive.
Yeah.
You didn't know this is going
on?
Well, no, I didn't.
But you don't even know. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's why we as people just need to take things less personal, too. You know, when I was at my grandpa's funeral, I had some clients messaging me that day. But they didn't know. It's not their fault. You know, and I just messaged them and I said, hey, you know, I'm at my grandpa's funeral. Like, I'll text you guys tomorrow. You know, and then they're like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm just saying this is why I'm not going to reply to you, but I'll book you tomorrow. And then, you know, but they don't know. Like you said, a lot of people don't check social media. Like, just because I shared it on my Facebook page doesn't mean that all of those people saw it, you know.
Right.
Facebook
You're
has a weird
right.
algorithm anyway.
You're absolutely right, because I've been on both sides of it. I've, like, you know,
like just straight messaging because you don't check anything because you just don't think about it, you know, and people have done the same thing to me. My dog died that one day or whatever, and somebody messaged me about something, and I'm kind of like the same way as you. I'm like, yo, so my dog just died. Give me a second. Let me figure out some business. I'll be like right back with you or whatever. And they'll do the same. They'll be like, an honest mistake.
Oh, my God.
I just don't know, you know?
No, you don't. You don't. And some days are just more overwhelming for people, and, you know, sometimes they need a minute. So
I'm so glad you brought that up. You just made me feel more normal.
No, definitely. That's what I try, like, with clients and stuff, too, if they don't message me back right away or, you know, like, even my vet, she's horrible at getting back to people. Love her to death. She's got a lot of stuff going on in her life. And so I've just come to terms with it. But some of my clients will be like, I've been trying to get a hold of Sarah for, like, 2 days. I'm like, well, it might take a week. Well, I'm like, don't take offense to it. She's just got a lot of things going on in her life. And they're like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah. And then I, like, ramble off what she has going on. And they're like, oh, shit. Like, we didn't know she did all that. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, she probably has, like, 2,000 unopened texts. So it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. But it's easy to take things personal. I get it. I've done it before.
It
always.
Me too.
Like what you just said, if you sit back for a second and don't initially take it personal. And then I have. I've done it before. I've done it before. But if you sit back and look at it from a logical perspective, usually 9 times out of 10, it's not that big of a deal, you know?
Yep.